It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We turn now to activism around the lead pipe crisis in Milwaukee as communities nationwide seek to replace millions of lead service lines. Call in with your questions about lead exposure and tap water, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Deanna Branch is a mother and Milwaukee activist working to protect children from lead poisoning with the Coalition on Lead Emergency. And a week ago, she was an invited guest of the First Lady at President Biden's State of the Union. Deanna, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Let's turn to your son, Aiden, who was hospitalized twice and found to have high levels of lead in his system. What is often misunderstood about the problem of lead poisoning?
What's the biggest misconception is that there's no safe level of lead in the blood, especially for a child, and that it's a lifelong thing that he will have to work through and live with for the rest of his life. It's not just a temporary fix that will just go away. It's a lifelong struggle that he'll have to battle with. It causes a lot of other health problems down the road, developmental delays, speech. It's a lot of different things that children have to deal with when they're affected by lead, and it affects every child differently. And that's really what makes it so, scary for a parent, because we don't know what to expect. We have to just work through the outcome of whatever, the severity of the lead poisoning, however they're impacted. We have to work through all the developmental challenges that they will have to face. So it's really a lifelong thing that we have to work through with our children to embrace them and to be the best possible child that they can be. So I really want other parents to understand that, because it really affects every child differently.
It was really special to see your visibility at the State of the Union address. Are federal lawmakers giving enough attention to the problem of lead poisoning?
It definitely is. And I was definitely hoping that when I decided to share my story, that it would just impact one person to say, oh, my child's been through this too. I want to help. I wasn't expecting to get as much attention as it did, but I'm happy that I was invited by the vice president and she heard my story. And I didn't feel like I was just invited just to hear my story. I thought she actually heard me and she valued what I was saying and that she wants to make a difference. And that really touched my heart that so many people really listened to my story and now they're advocating with me. And I know it's going to be a long way to go to get all the lead laterals out of the city of Milwaukee, but it's definitely a start, and I want to see all the lead everywhere. I don't want it to end with just Milwaukee. I don't want to see any more children affected by lead. I think it's high time and age where our kids should have safe drinking water, and there should be no lead in the water, paint, and soil. So the fact that it's getting as much recognition as it is just is mind-boggling, and it just makes me so happy as a mother, especially for my son to be able to witness this history in the making. It's very honorable, and I'm so proud to be in this moment right now.
You mentioned two words here, paint and soil. That is not lead pipes. Can you also explain that the sources, the main culprits for lead exposure in children today?
Definitely. The three main sources for lead are in the water, paint, and the soil. And we advocate for lead removal, the Coalition on Lead Emergency. We advocate for lead removal in all the three major aspects, not just focusing on one. But the lead pipe summit was definitely about lead laterals being removed out of the water. That's the main focus for the bipartisan infrastructure that I was invited to for the lead pipe summit in January. So I'm just happy to see the removal of lead being removed in all aspects, and I advocate for lead removal in all aspects to make sure every child is safe.
Let's talk about this federal funding. You mentioned the infrastructure law. There is ARPA funding, American Rescue Plan Act funding. What could speed up the replacement of lead pipes in communities like Milwaukee and across Wisconsin?
Yeah, we asked for recently, last Saturday, I believe, but the ARPA hearing, we just only asked for, it was, I believe, $49 million funds available left for the ARPA funds, and we only asked for $5 million of that for the Lead Safe and Healthy Homes Fund. We figured that would just be a start to get us moving in the right direction. We started to ask for low. We could have asked for more, but I felt like we were just trying to make sure that a little bit is enough to get us started with building the Less Safe Healthy Homes Initiative. But really, I just feel like as much funds as ARPA can stand to help with the removal of lead is definitely an issue that needs to be addressed. And it's a global issue at this point where, yes, lead levels have to be removed. It's just so much work in Milwaukee. They estimated a decade for all the removal of lead. And I just feel like that's, we can go a little bit faster than that, I feel like.
We can move faster, yes.
As much funds and resources that's available, we can make it happen. So I'm definitely going to be in it for the long run to make sure that it moves in a timely manner, that children don't have to wait. We do provide food that helps the kid absorb the lead and get the lead out of their system. And
I want to pause, Deanna, I just want to pause right there. Deanna Branch of Milwaukee talking with activist for lead poisoning awareness. Join in with your questions, your comments on the lead crisis, how it affects you, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Milwaukee activist Deanna Branch with us highlighting the city's lead pipe replacement effort and was a special guest a week ago at President Joe Biden's State of the Union address, exemplifying the administration's policy work on the lead crisis. Call in with your questions, your thoughts, anytime, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Deanna, you wrote a book with your son Aiden, the lead-free superhero. How can parents help their kids learn about lead poisoning?
Yes, this book was illustrated completely by Aiden. It's called Aiden the Lead-Free Superhero, and it's really a children's book for children to let them know more about lead. And Aiden wants all of the kids who are affected by lead to feel like superheroes in their own story. So the book is for the children, but in the back, it's a little informative packet for the parents, a little information log created by my church nurse, Nurse Chris. She's awesome. It has information and details on the next steps and what advice and learning tools you can use when your child is impacted by lead. So I really feel like that book is a good resource tool for our children as well as parents to learn more about lead and to be more proactive in their child's health and well-being.
The State Health Department reports show that the number of Wisconsin children being tested for lead is down from past years. How could testing and treatment become more widely accessible, do you think?
I know there was a delay in capillary tests. I'm not sure why there was a delay or why I hear so many parents coming to me saying that they're advocating for their children to be lead tested, and most pediatricians are saying no. I'm not sure why that is. That was shocking to me as well. But I am advocating. We are working with Children's Hospital. I actually have my son's pediatrician. She's a part of COLE now. And we refer her to parents who are feeling like their concerns as a parent aren't being addressed by their pediatrician. So she's our go-to pediatrician now. So it was just awesome to have that kind of connection. And we want to get more pediatricians on board to do more lead testing and to advocate for children who are affected by lead, especially on the north side, where it's severely impacted and tests are low. So we're trying to change that narrative, and I'm just so happy that I feel like we're making it possible and building relationships to get the issues addressed and moving forward and making sure that the lead level is down on the north side like it's doing great on the south side. We want to see progress everywhere. So
it must be
moving forward in the right direction.
It must be wonderful to have your pediatrician on board at the Coalition on Lead Emergency and really having that medical advocate there to help people understand what is going on with lead.
It really is. She really helped me when Aiden was lead poisoned. She really advocated for my son, so it's definitely great to have that resource for other parents.
How do doctors lower lead levels in children? How does that work?
Eating the right foods. We discussed that, too, in the book. It's a lot of foods that help absorb the lead and get the lead out. And it's just shocking that most parents don't even know that and what foods to look for and how to prepare the foods. That's why I'm working on a new book. It's going to be more of a cookbook with lead safe healthy recipes to absorb the lead and get it out. And actually, I want it to be recipes that children are actually going to love and enjoy. My kids actually love the fruits and vegetables. So I want to make sure the recipes that kids are actually going to want to eat and enjoy. And then it's going to be easy for parents to make. So that's definitely my new venture now in the near future.
Oh, that can be a tall order with some kids.
It definitely is.
What else do you want parents to learn from your experience?
I want them to learn that they're not alone. That was my biggest thing when it all happened to me. I didn't even know what lead was. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't feel like I was getting enough answers from the people that I felt like I should have provided more answers and helped me out. I didn't feel like I had that support. So I want them to know now that the Coalition Lead Emergency is here to advocate not for them but with them, and we have that support that you need. Mm. So you're not in this alone, and we're going to, it's really a team effort. And we're all in this together. And I don't want any parents to feel like how me and Eddie felt like we were alone and this was just our battle to face alone. Like, no, we're going to work and build this together for our community.
Deanna, thank you for joining us and sharing your story.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Deanna Branch is an advocate working to protect children from lead in paint and pipes, other sources in Milwaukee housing. She's a member of the city's Coalition on Lead Emergency. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a new report from the 31-member Governor's Health Equity Council. They published 20 recommendations on how to deal with the conditions that create health disparities. Be part of this conversation, calling with your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle Robinson is director of the Office of Health Equity in the State Department of Health Services. She is vice chair of the Governor's Health Equity Council. Michelle, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here with you all, and happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Yes, and Gina Green-Harris is here as well, director of the Center for Community Engagement and Health Partnerships at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and chair of this council. Gina, welcome.
Thank you so much. And again, happy Valentine's Day. Good to be here.
Gina, let's start with you. Governor Evers delivers his next state budget address tomorrow. And how do you recommend lawmakers adjust their budget priorities with an eye on health equity for Wisconsinites?
Well, yeah, thank you so much for that call, that question. And, I'll answer it, but want to just really acknowledge the Equity Council and the great work that it did over the last 2 years. And this great report is definitely something that we lift up as we prepare for budget season, recognizing that these recommendations are all really engaged around equity outcomes that we know that if utilized can actually improve, we believe, improve health outcomes as a state. And so, the council really went to great lengths to recognize that these principles in this health equity report would definitely drive us to our principles of respect and dignity and fair shot thriving in the state. And we believe in Wisconsin, we should not leave anyone behind. So as we're thinking of what to lift, again, this is not this report really has what we believe nuggets of information that can bring us closer, because these are the recommendations of our community, of community members from this executive, from this council that really talked with community members about what was prevalent in their respective areas. So I think there's a lot of things that I have to be honest, I can't call one thing out that mm-hmm. I think, would really be raised in the budget, but I think all of these recommendations would withstand and it really bring about some health equity points in our state that really would stand with the Wisconsin idea.
And Michelle, you know, I like how your report like poses the question just flat out, what is the state of health equity? And I think it is important that we level set. I mean, can you tell us what health equity is like here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I can. And I will start by just saying, what is health equity? And the council selected a definition that simply means is health equity means that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. And when we think about health equity, we're not just thinking about sort of those things that we can do as individuals, like, oh, do you, you know, work out at least 30 minutes a day? Or, you know, are you eating healthy? Those things are really important. But what we know from decades of research about what actually shapes individuals and populations' health outcomes, we know that that what tends to have a bigger impact on health are these social structural things like access to health, healthy living environments, whether or not you're exposed to community violence or pollution, or whether or not you are able to access education and education, quality education. All of those things matter. And so when we think about health equity in our state, recently, we had the Population Health Institute released its report card that examined sort of health equity in our state on along the dimensions of race and economics and also education. And we know that our state has both health disparities, but we have an overall population health issue that has been worsened, unfortunately, by the COVID-19 pandemic. And so when you look at health indicators, and there are lots of health indicators, so it's really hard to say specifically, but depending upon what community you're looking at, we know that there are considerable health disparities when we look at things like maternal health outcomes within the Black community. We see cardiovascular outcomes when we're looking at our indigenous communities. We see things like diabetes when we're looking at our Latinx community, or we may also see cancer morbidities when we're looking at our rural communities, right? Mm. And so there are considerable health outcomes, and we also know that looking at a population level at the national level, that despite decades, I mean, we have been able to increase life expectancy over the course of the last century. And for the first time over the last 3 years, we are reporting declines across populations and in our life expectancy as a country. And so this is a pivotal moment, I believe, for us to sort of confront and say, like, what is the future that we want to build for our children, for ourselves? And what are the things that we're willing to do in order to instill and to ensure that we are building a Wisconsinite that is attractive, that can be a pillar, that can be a beacon for what it means to build a state that has smart policy and social structure that really informs, protects, and promotes the health and well-being of its residents.
Gina, what we're hearing out of Governor Evers recently, you know, calling for a $500 million expansion in mental health services, that, you know, Healthy Minds is a focus here. What would that boost mean for addressing inequities in public health?
Yeah, I think that, quite frankly, we all know that, especially when we think about the COVID era that we're coming out of, that mental health is definitely something that we would like to address. And we know that mental health is something that impacts us across this community, across the state. And it impacts us in the three cores, right? So our economics, our social and physical environment, all of those are impacting our mental health capacity. And so recognizing that, we also know that service delivery models are, there's this great need for more mental health providers. There's this great need for access to better mental health services. And so definitely recognizing that there is a need for more support in that area. However, we also know, again, as we think about this report here, that mental health is encapsulated in good health and overall health stability for all of our Wisconsin constituents. And so I think that as we think about what it would do to really improve, as Michelle has given a great observation of our current health equity situation in the state. We know that when we think about addressing the barriers to mental health access, addressing the barriers to mental health service delivery models within across the context of the state. So for instance, if you're in, you know, rural Wisconsin, your needs are the same, but look differently as to how to access those services. And so what I think about as we're looking to tackle this issue of capacity around mental health, that we have to think about what does it look like across our state, and how will these funds and how will these dollars support us as we continue to move forward. And so I think it would definitely improve some of our service models. It would improve our communities overall, having access and ability to address their mental health needs. And I think that's the other thing that I'm recognizing, obviously, as we're doing our work, is people are now having public conversations, quite frankly, in community about mental health issues and concerns.
Talking about the findings of the Governor's Health Equity Council, Gina Green Harris there and Michelle Robinson, the council's chair and vice chair. I want to turn to one morsel in this report that stuck out to me and surprised me. And you cite that Wisconsin ranks last in the country in providing preventative dental services to children enrolled in Medicaid. Michelle, what is going on?
Well, you know, I think that's actually a kind of complex question of what's going on. I think some of it is that we don't actually have a ton of Medicaid providers who provide care for dental care for children who are on Medicaid, so that we have a sort of a supply issue on one hand. And then we also have sort of a broader sort of funding and support issue about, like, how are we reimbursing? What is the rate? How can we attract more providers into the network and in order to ensure that the supply and the demand can be met. But as you also note that, you know, it's important for children to have access to dental care and to get access to dental care as early as possible. We know that access to good oral health has impacts on not only children's self-esteem, but their ability to show up at school, to learn, to focus, to engage. And there has been nationally for decades studies on the challenges of oral health care access for children and how that impacts and shapes their learning and their academic achievement capacity.
And you're seeing children landing in ERs over dental emergencies. I want to turn to you, Gina, in the moments we have left. You recommend in the report to make the work and the purpose of this council permanent and in state law. What effect would that have on Wisconsin?
That's an excellent question. And I think the people have opportunity, you know, when we think about how do we maintain this work. How do we continue to drive this work forward? And what do we need to actually create this structure to help make sure that we are actually living forward with the Wisconsin idea? I think this report has really raised an alert and raised a level of consciousness about what can happen in Wisconsin to actually build health equity from community voice. And that's exactly what this report is. It is community voice. And so we believe that, you know, community voice makes a difference across the state as a collective, right? Oftentimes what we know is that there's sometimes a divisive voice, right? It's dividing the folks. And so this is not in any way, shape, form, or fashion, I think, a political stance,
This is more of a uniting driver here. And we are out of time. Thank you for joining us. Gina Green Harris, Michelle Robinson, there, chair and vice chair of the Governor's Health Equity Council. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.